To warn you, this episode contains descriptions of domestic abuse, violence, and sexual assault.
I'm Nick Wallace. This is reporting Depp v. Heard. Regular updates from the court in the celebrity trial of the century.
Hello and welcome back to Fairfax County Court. We've had our week away and now it's so lovely to be in that building once more. I didn't get into court this morning and this is why. This queue apparently started at around 7 p.m. last night, although there were some people saying that there were people here at 7 a.m. on Sunday morning. Anyway, I do know that some people who normally find themselves at the front of the queue were in the 50s, and one person who turned up at 1:45 this morning was outside the first 100 people queuing up. This story, this case, this trial has become national news and everyone wants a piece of it. You can have a debate about whether it's a good or bad thing that there are no journalists other than the pool reporter for Court TV sitting in the actual courtroom itself, but maybe that's for another day. Anyway, I did manage to interview two young women who queued up to get into court today. They are Mary and Vanessa, and we'll be hearing from them very shortly. I've also got a remote park bench interview with an attorney called Nicole Levitt, who works with victims of domestic violence. I have received a complaint that far too many of my interviewees are pro-Johnny Depp supporters. Now, many of the people who are in court, I've certainly not seen anyone today who's an Amber Heard supporter, and I would say the proportion is about 99-1, if that. I have yet to find in the last 2 weeks anyone who supports Amber Heard in and around court. So unfortunately, unless there are vocal and visible Amber Heard supporters who are going to come to court every morning, then I am not going to be able to interview any on the park bench for an immediate debrief of what it was like to be in the main courtroom. But I will try and get some more pro Amber Heard supporters before this series finishes. However, that's not going to be the case today. Nonetheless, I hope you enjoy the conversation with Mary and Vanessa. Yeah. First of all, let's talk about the queue experience. So go on, what time did you arrive?
8:30-ish,
8:15. Yeah, 8:30 or 9 o'clock last night.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
And how many people were in the queue by the time you arrived?
We were 76 and 77. Yeah. They had like a marker system at first, so that way people wouldn't like infiltrate and try to cheat their way in.
But apparently that was the first night they tried that.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't an official thing, so it kind of got screwed up.
Oh. Was it the deputies who were marking your hands?
No, and I didn't know that because this is my first time here. So I was number 77, but I ended up being number 76.
So was this like a self-policing thing that was going on?
It was kind of, yeah, and it was
We were
kind
trying
of organized,
to be peaceful
actually.
And organized about it.
Yeah.
And we were trying to have an honorary system so that way no one would ruin it for anybody. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, we knew the deputies were going to show up and the sheriffs, and we didn't want to cause any fights and, you know, ruin it for everyone and get us all booted off the property. So we were trying to make an honorary system, and of course someone has to start a fight. The sheriffs and the deputies come in, and they try to organize their own system and mess ours up.
It wasn't even a fight. Someone got here late because there was already 100 people here, and they called, like, saying that someone got into a fight. So then, like, they came out saying, they probably did have official orders saying that we weren't allowed to be there till 1.
That's the rule as I understood it,
yeah. We were all in a line, like, and we had our numbers on, and they, like, all pushed us off to the side, and then people, like, joined in the line, and then people cut, and it was a little chaotic at, like, 2 a.m.
But you got in.
Yes.
Thankfully.
And tell me what your experience was like of seeing Amber Heard in the stand and how the day went from your perspective. Because there was an awful lot of information to take in because court days are an hour longer at least going forward.
I'm a bit ahead of myself, but I really like how the day finished.
So we finished with the cross-examination. Do you want to talk about that first? So go on, take us through the cross-examination.
I just think it kind of shows like her hypocrisy.
Go on.
The big one.
Are you talking about the donation?
Yeah, that's
right,
the big one.
Explain the donation. This is because Amber Heard said she donated $7 million
yes.
of her divorce settlement, i.e. the entirety of her divorce mm-hmm. settlement. And she said it on Danish television, didn't she? Very explicitly,
yep.
she had donated
she said,
that
donated.
Amount. And now she said, I only meant pledged.
And then she's like, I consider pledging a donation the same thing. And they're not.
And it was just consistent bickering between the lawyer and Amber Heard.
There was Camille Vasquez who was doing the cross-examination for Johnny Depp's team. There was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, wasn't
mm-hmm,
there?
Absolutely.
So what was that like to experience that?
It was very surreal. I was so glad that Amber was finally caught in the act of her own lies. I was talking to it with other members who were watching in the queue with me. Like, she's probably told so many lies that she can't even remember what she's told. And she just got stuck in the web.
her view is that she was never going to donate the $7 million all at once. She was going to donate it in stages for tax efficiency, and she stopped donating when she was sued by Johnny Depp. So you guys are Johnny Depp supporters. You've come here to support Johnny Depp.
100%. Yes, and she honestly claimed, more.
And we heard a litany of abuse that Johnny Depp has allegedly meted out on Amber Heard before we got to cross-examination. Very, very detailed, very, very clear about what she believes happened to her, and very, very robust in her responses about the abuse. I agree, less robust about the definition of donate and pledge.
Yeah.
What do you think about what she was saying about the length of abuse that she was subjected to and the sustained nature of it?
The evidence didn't match. There wasn't any evidence. And she contradicted herself by saying, oh, well, I would love to show these photos to the jury, but there were no photos to show. I mean, I just thought that was very interesting, and especially when her attorneys, just especially during the cross-examination, they just seemed to stall, because there were just so much, like, large lengths of time where it was just white noise for everyone else, because they didn't know what to do. They were scrambling. They were, honestly, I mean, for lack of a better word, they were shook.
So... Where does this leave you after watching this day of evidence in the flesh? Because presumably you've been following this on television. So how does being in the courtroom, or does it change in any way your perception of the way this trial is going?
I always had my faith in Johnny, but being in the room and feeling like the emotions in the room, seeing expressions on people's faces in like live action, it is totally different than seeing it on a screen. Because, you know, on a screen, you get to boo and hiss and, you know, cheer for everyone. But in court, you have to take this seriously. Because, I mean, you are in court. You have to act as if you're in court and truly listen. I feel like if you're on a screen, you get to selectively listen and, you know, just bicker like, oh, I don't like her. I don't like him. And a bunch of he said, she said. But you in court, you have to look at the facts, listen to the stories, and you truly get a concept of each side instead of just selectively listening to the one you want to hear.
And did you get a chance to see how the jury were reacting in this at all, or were you not
Unfortunately,
sitting?
Unfortunately, I couldn't see.
So we you were on Johnny Depp's side, were you?
Yeah, okay. Kind of in the corner. I could see like two people.
Okay. So are you confident that the jury are going to come to the right conclusion?
I believe so.
I hope so.
You think the right conclusion is Johnny Depp winning? So you think the jury are going to find for Johnny that he was defamed?
I hope so. I 100,000,000% so. Believe in Johnny. I have been a supporter of him always, and I just think karma will give people what they deserve in the end, whether it be good or bad.
And I'm so amazed by people's absolute certainty in this, because of course the thing about it is that none of us were there. No one knows what happened behind closed doors for real.
That's true.
Yeah, that is true, but there is a lack of evidence that's kind of raising eyebrows and other questions.
And when you say lack of evidence, does this mean the description that Amber Heard is giving about the injuries she sustained and the beating she sustained is not borne out by the photographs that we've seen in court?
That or, and or just what? The timelines aren't lining
so
up.
So far, Amber Heard's word has been like disproven more often than Johnny's.
It just doesn't match up. The photos don't match the dramatization I feel that Amber is giving. And I just feel like that has really, like, just being in court has really opened my eyes to seeing that. Because I feel like if I was watching it on a screen, I would kind of just, like, surpass all the pictures and stuff. But now, like, I was looking at it, I don't see anything that she had, like, needed to prove. Because she was so adamant about, oh, well, I needed to prove, you know, that this has happened to me. This is my story. This is what Johnny did to me. But I didn't see any proof of anything. I saw what could be, you know, attempts to confirm and validate her story, but I don't see concrete evidence that is against Johnny.
Okay, but so, I mean, things like the scratches on her arm, which were focused in on earlier in the day, I was racking my brains to come back into the, remember exactly what we went through, but there was a lot of focus and attention given to those scratches on her arm. I mean, she says they were sustained when she was in the middle of being sexually abused by Johnny in Australia. I mean, I don't think anyone's denying those scratches are there.
Yeah.
No.
But you're not buying that story.
No, because especially now with, you know, special effects makeup really being creative and coming out into play, especially in Hollywood of all places in LA, it's easy to just make up. I think any, you know, even just any average person who doesn't have the money to have all this fancy makeup can pull it off. And I mean, I even, from watching this in the past, she claimed that she used a specific makeup brand to like help with covering up all her injuries. And that specific company, you know, kind of, they, you know, clapped back and said, no, that's not true at all.
Mm.
We didn't even have this
it was,
at
yes,
that time
it
that
was
she
it.
Alleged.
Yeah. Well, I think that was her counsel making a mistake, if I'm being generous to her. She was waving around the one brand. What other mistakes have you spotted?
I just really wonder, like, if she's going to take the time and have our friend help her, like, take pictures of, like, these, like, soft red spots. You could have more concrete evidence if you also took a picture of, like, all these, like, dark bruises and bloody, like, injuries she's claiming to have. And if she's taking the time to take some of these pictures, where are the other pictures? I just have a lot of questions.
Coming up then, a pre-recorded remote park bench interview with Nicole Levitt. I recorded this, I think, on Friday morning. I was just trying to put some remote park bench interviews in the bank, so obviously it doesn't refer to what happened today, week 5, day 17 of evidence, but it's more of a generic overview of her experience working with victims of domestic violence and why, on this occasion, she appears to be supporting Johnny Depp.
The main point of this case is it's a defamation trial. So both parties have a really high burden of proof, of proving that the other party acted with actual malice in making defamatory statements about them. It's not actually a trial about domestic violence, although the allegations are centered on domestic violence.
Yeah, and it does, obviously, the allegations help to build the case for truth, mm-hmm. which then help to make the case for defamation. And that's why we're spending so much time on the actual truth behind the alleged defamation. Are any of your clients ever men? Do you, and if they are, do you find that the court system is less inclined to believe them or in some way slanted against them?
So sometimes I also represent victims in custody hearings. And sometimes allegations of domestic violence are viewed by judges and other attorneys, other parties, as just being brought up so that they have an edge in custody.
But what about, I don't know whether you've had any male victims of domestic violence come through your offices. Have you had to represent anyone alleging that? And how do you think the court system tends to view men who are making those allegations?
So I haven't represented any men, but I know that my agency has. And I think that it's harder for men to prove domestic violence because there's a natural skepticism of, okay, she's 5'3", you're 6'1". How did she abuse you? How could you not get away? The other issue is control, like which party had control in the relationship? Was one party, dominating the finances, the children, the medical decisions? Stuff like that, in addition to physical violence or threats. So there's a lot that will be looked at, and I think that judges are more skeptical of claims made by men.
Have you ever had a client or potential client who you think was making things up, or someone who you started to represent and then thought, hang on a minute, this person is not credible? Is it ever sort of cut and dried like that, or how does that, where does that go when you if you get that inkling that you might not be representing someone who's telling the truth?
So I have to have an honest discussion with them about what they're telling me and how it sounds to me, and it's not an easy discussion to have with the client. Mm. But
and why they're telling it to you?
Yes, it has to be had. And sometimes it's simply a matter of the way the brain processes traumatic events. The brain doesn't process it in a linear fashion, and it's not stored that way. So sometimes the way it comes out is not linear, and it can be confusing. But if there's something that outright contradicts what was said before, that's kind of a red flag, and it's something that needs to be explored with the client.
Okay, so bearing in mind everything you've told me about what a complex and difficult job you have to do, how are you viewing Depp v. Heard so far? We've had 4 weeks of evidence, and we've also had Amber Heard on the stand.
So far, I believe that Amber Heard is not coming across as very credible. Her claims are really over the top and outrageous. And she doesn't have any physical evidence really to back up those outrageous claims. And I feel that there's something very like incongruent in the emotional affect that she gives off while she's on the stand. And I think that's something that a jury might pick up on. That being said, that doesn't mean that Johnny Depp is going to win his case.
But that's really interesting, because going back to what you said, yes, this is a defamation case and not a domestic violence case. But you, with all your experience of dealing with victims of domestic violence, you're not seeing the credibility in Amber Heard that you see in the people that you represent. Can you pick that apart a little more?
Yes. Like I said, her claims are really over the top and her evidence doesn't seem to back it up. In addition, there are a lot of other witnesses that have already testified. They didn't see any evidence of her claims. They didn't see this bruising. They didn't see or hear her being abused. And one thing that was very telling to me was the audio of the Australia incident where his finger got chopped off. You can hear her say, like, I didn't mean to do it, something to that effect. I didn't mean to hurt him. So, you know, that's kind of contradicting her testimony.
Do you believe that there is such a thing as mutual abuse? Could this have been such a toxic relationship that one person will fly off the handle and start the abuse, and then another time another person will fly off the handle and start the abuse? I have to tread carefully around this, because I've been told that even the phrase mutual abuse can be triggering, because abusive partners have used it as an accusation against their victims in order to try and shift the blame for what was happening onto them. But where do you stand on that?
It has been used by abusive partners to shift the blame, but it's also true that in a toxic relationship, there can be mutual combat, and there often is. So in a domestic violence case, you have to, or a judge, a fact finder, has to figure out, was someone the primary aggressor here? Or is this just a case of a toxic relationship and they both abused each other? Here, I don't think we have to find out who is the primary aggressor. We just have to see if their claims of abuse on both sides are true or false. And if each party made claims of abuse knowing they were false.
If we get to a point, I mean, I don't know whether we can do too many hypotheticals because your head will start to spin, but yeah. If we get to a point where the jury believe that there was abuse on both sides, and then they have to sort of funnel that through a lens of whether or not it's defamatory that Amber Heard wrote that op-ed or the other counterclaim, which we really haven't explored yet in this trial so far, which what you'd expect will come out over the next 2 weeks. Does the jury just have to be convinced that there was one act in which Johnny Depp was the aggressor in order to make out the case for truth in the Amber Heard op-ed, and therefore the claim that he's making fails? Or is it more complicated than that?
It's probably more complicated than that, but it's definitely possible that the jury could say there was one act of abuse here, so she's not lying. There was one act of abuse here, so he's not lying.
I see. And I mean, that's the sort of thing that I've been thinking all along, that one of these parties is lying. But I'm now starting to wonder whether actually that it's that black and white, whether the truth of the matter is going to lie buried in between somewhere. And it's a sort of difficult job for the jury to try and extricate it from what they're allowed to hear. I mean, one thing, I don't know whether you take the same view, but it seems to me that the jury is actually going to be making their decision based on far more limited information than is already in the public domain, because of the way that evidence is funneled through the courts by the agreement of both parties and then the judge before it can actually be seen by the jury. And because they won't have access to transcripts, they've only got their own notes. They are kind of making a decision based on largely their impressions of what they saw and heard in court. Is that an ideal system?
Yes, I think it is. I think that we don't want a jury to be swayed by public opinion. In America, we've had a few big cases like that. And the big fear was that the jury was afraid of public opinion. And that's why they made the decision they made. Here, though, they're not sequestered. And I'm wondering, how is it possible, especially in this off week, for them to not hear anything about this trial, because it's kind of blown up. Like, it's so Hollywood.
They have got a former US Navy Marine reading them the Riot Act every time they go, they finish for the day. I'd take her seriously.
Yeah, I would take her seriously too, but she's not following them around every day. Yeah. Like, you know, they turn on their computer and the news feed comes up. So how easy is it for them, or how difficult is it for them to avoid all mention of this trial?
If the jury decide that for whatever reason, Johnny Depp was not defamed and his action fails, there has been so much information that has reached the public domain. I mean, you've called it in favor of him. You don't think that Amber Heard is a credible witness. Where would he go from here if a jury on one side of the Atlantic and a judge on the other decided that essentially he was a wife beater, yet there is this huge swell of public opinion in his favor? What happens to Johnny Depp going forward?
So I think that one of his main reasons for bringing this suit was to sort of redeem his public image. And I think that he's done that. I think that so far in this trial, he's successfully managed to do that. He's come across, definitely, you know, he has alcohol and drug issues, and they definitely had a toxic relationship. So none of that looks good. But if he can come out of this trial with people, the general public, believing he's not a wife beater, he's won.
My thanks to Nicole, and my thanks to Vanessa and Mary before that. I hope you have enjoyed another remote park bench interview back at Fairfax County Court. First day of four this week over, a very, very long day. Went from 9 a.m. all the way through to 5:30 this afternoon, and I think that's going to be the pattern for the rest of the week. I have to go back and write a newsletter, so if you want to subscribe to the newsletter and support my work, please go to reportingdepvher.net/newsletter, and for a small donation you can get on a perhaps more considered and rounded overview of the day's events as I was able to perceive them. And yes, I'd be very grateful for your support in that regard. But that concludes this one for today. I'll be back with another one on day 18 of this epic, lengthy trial.
I'm Nick Wallace. This is Reporting Depp v. Heard.